This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
We must remain patient. When Americans begin a noble cause, we finish it. We are 117 days from the end of major combat operations. That is simply not very long.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice speaking earlier this week in San Antonio, Texas. NPR Senior News Analyst Dan Shore joins us. Dan, good to be back in business with you.
Nice to be back in business with you, Scott. And could I just comment on Condoleezza Rice saying that the United States never abandons a noble cause? Mm-hmm. That's a remarkable thing to say after Somalia, after Beirut, Lebanon, after, let's say, Vietnam. But let's go ahead.
This week, as we will note, there was news from all of the countries which President Bush has characterized as the axis of evil. That would be Iraq, North Korea, and Iran. Maybe we should talk about them in that order.
Well, although yes, but if we were to take them in order of probable nuclear threat to the United States, we'd have to reverse it and make it North Korea, Iran, and Iraq last. But let's do Iraq first.
Okay. An unfortunate milestone passed in Iraq because the number of U.S. soldiers killed since President Bush declared the end of major combat was surpassed this week. By deaths that have occurred since that time. And, of course, yesterday, that enormous car bomb, apparently, that exploded outside of a mosque in Najaf, south of Baghdad.
Right.
What's your reading on how that's going to complicate both? Well, go ahead.
The bombing in Najaf is a most ominous event because this was not a suicide bombing. It was a remote control bomb of the kind that have been used by Saddam Hussein's security people. The Ayatollah al-Hakim was the most prominent of Shiite clerics who had expressed willingness to work with the United States. This could also be, however, a rival Shiite group, but more probably elements of the Ba'ath Party, who are bent now on creating chaos, as with the bombing of the UN headquarters last week, and making Iraq ungovernable by the United States.
There seemed to be some indications from the administration this week that the United States was open and more keenly interested in securing some kind of international participation in a force.
Well, yes. The United States had long resisted involvement in anything by the UN except in humanitarian endeavors. The administration is beginning to fear now, clearly, quagmire talk beginning to come up in an election year and the political effect of continued American casualties. And so we did get the Deputy Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, saying very carefully, letting me know the United States would consider a multinational force under the leadership of the United Nations, but under command of the United States. Mm-hmm. Where you divide between leadership and command, I'm not sure if you can figure that out. Some, like France, say, yeah, UN force, yes. American command, no. But now Russian President Putin comes in and says it's okay with him to have a multinational force under U.S. command. Big surprise.
On to North Korea, because there are 3 days of talks that concluded between six countries, U.S., China, Russia, Japan, and both Koreas. North Korea said it's actually going to go ahead and test a nuclear weapon.
Yep, it did. Well, but then in spite of that fact, or maybe because of that fact, the one-on-one meeting with North Korea, the United States has long, long, long refused, happened this time very informally in the course of a six-nation conference. Assistant Secretary of State James Kelly found a little time to have an informal talk with his opposite number from North Korea. They met face-to-face without any kind of fuss. Secondly, under the leadership of China, which has stepped out in a most active role, they've decided they're going to meet again within 2 months. So that I think somehow there's positive movement that makes the fact that North Korea now and then sounds off about, yes, we have them, yes, we're going to test them, so on and so forth. But the attempt to find a solution to that problem simply goes ahead. It seems to me inconceivable that if North Korea is willing to dismantle its nuclear weapons program in return for a formal pledge by the United States not to invade North Korea, that the U.S., which has no intention of invading North Korea, can't give that pledge.
On to Iran now, because international inspectors there found traces of highly enriched uranium in Iran, which caused Iran to renounce some of the earlier representations it had made about a nuclear program.
Yeah, well, Mohammed El-Baradei, the head of the UN watchdog agency, says that Iran's nuclear program has been going on longer than people realize that Iran's been shopping for nuclear components on the international black market. He mentioned no country, but it's undoubtedly Pakistan, America's faithful ally, that he's talking about. As I mentioned earlier, the United States seemed to have its nuclear foes in upside-down order.
Let me ask before we leave the general area of interest, if you've gotten a reaction this week. Prime Minister Blair became, I believe, just the second British Prime Minister to testify before a government inquiry, Lord Hunt's inquiry, which formally was convened over the death of David Kelly.
That is so. Well, the Prime Minister swears on his honor that the famous dossier on Iraq was not sexed up, as the saying goes there in Britain, in order to put in the chilling ability by Iraq to launch missiles on 45 minutes' notice. All of this in order to sell the American-British invasion to the British public. The inquiry has been fixed on the suicide of arms expert David Kelly, who leaked word of the fiddling around with the report to the BBC, but it's not clear whether the BBC used it in the form in which he leaked it. And now Alistair Campbell, a top aide of Blair, who also denies any hanky-panky, suddenly resigns to spend more time with his family, he says. They're having quite a time with this in Britain.
Let me ask about events elsewhere in the Middle East. As we sit here today, Israeli helicopters have reportedly fired four missiles at a car traveling in central Gaza.
Yes.
Reports about at least one injury. On the ground. There were more what are called targeted assassinations and more violence, and the reemergence of Yasser Arafat.
Well, yes, that is quite interesting. There's been all this renewed violence, which has raised the question of how much control Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas has, was it any real control of Palestinian militants. And then, as though to prove that, Yasser Arafat, who's supposedly been on the sidelines with and nobody paying attention to him, is right there in the center of the arena again. He appeals to the militants to stop their attacks on Israeli civilians. And if he has more success than Abbas has, then he will have reestablished his position here. It does look as though there's a kind of a power struggle between Arafat and Abbas, and that'll have to be settled before anything positive can possibly happen.
The Columbia Accident Investigation Board released their report this week, and it criticized less specific technical problems in the design and function of the shuttle so much as what it caused the NASA culture, which they suggested led to an inability to cite the problems. Do you believe this program, or even the future of manned spaceflight, is at some jeopardy right now?
Well, the space program existed in large part because of the competition with the Soviet Union. Now there ain't no more Soviet Union to compete against, and the question has to be, how do you justify this program in its own terms? And there's some who are beginning to say it is really not worth the risks and the costs of putting these things into space with people on board, when a lot of the same thing can be done without people on board, with robots, with using our great technological capacity. And I think that is the debate which is now really just starting in the United States.
Dan, 4 score and 7. Happy birthday this week.
Thank you very much.
Dan Shore.